Well, welcome to the situation report for July 22nd. The situation is starting to get more and more hectic. And I've got some admin notes to start out with before I dig into the show. First things first, I mentioned I was changing the format of the show last week. We're going to stick with a sit rep on Mondays. We'll do a roundtable on Wednesday. There'll be video. And then on Thursday nights, we are going to do a live cast on Podbean, and that will be at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 o'clock Pacific. Same with the roundtable. So you'll see two roundtables a week, Wednesday and Thursday night. We decided to go with that format because Friday is more of a, it's a death hour. It's hard to get everybody coordinated, hard to get everybody on, hard to get the scheduling done. So decided to change format. And it was actually a couple of weeks ago that I decided to make some changes to the show, mainly because there's so much going on so fast that, you know, we decided that as a team, we decided that it was better to go with the roundtable twice a week than once a week and then do ad hoc roundtables as the situation presents itself. So there'll be three shows a week now. One will be a live stream podcast, and one will be a live stream on Rumble. So we're breaking it up just to give the folks on the roundtable a chance to, at least all these guys that are dedicated to be on the show and mix it up. So look for that on Thursday. I'll publish the details as soon as I get it all put together. As far as the situation goes, it's been an interesting couple of days. And as I said a couple of weeks ago, things are going to start to accelerate. You're going to start to see more and more events. You're going to start to see more and more things happening and more disclosures. And the reason why I talk about disclosures is for a couple of reasons. There's people that are, let's just put it this way. There's the global homo crowd that's in Davos that wants to basically control everybody on the planet. There's a group of oligarchs. There's a group of, let's just say, senior leaders within the U.S. and Europe that don't have a seat at the table. So this conflict we're seeing on the world stage is really between a very small group of people, at least as the way I understand it. How much of it is true, how much of not is true, who knows? We're reading the tea leaves. Part of reading the tea leaves is you're looking at events, indications, not so much the rhetoric, but the rhetoric tells you what their motivation is and what they're trying to convince the public to buy into. And we've seen an uptick in activity just in the last 2 months. And before we get to November, I guarantee you it will seem like May was quiet compared to where we will be in November. There will be some event that will disrupt the election, whether that happens on election day, a week before election, 2 weeks before the election, doesn't really matter. But I anticipate that there's going to be some serious disclosures that show up in the next several weeks that are going to enlighten the public and shock the public all at the same time. In fact, one of them happened today, and I think most people missed it. The confirmation that the shooter was visited at an FBI asset was dropped today in the form of cell phone tracing data, that an individual visited the shooter's house multiple times and then returned to Washington, D.C. to FBI offices. That's a huge revelation. And that's not conjecture. That's not narrative, that is data. And data doesn't lie. And you can manipulate it, you can manipulate statistics, but you can't manipulate data. So the system that they used to track you was used against them to track them and outed them. And the internet's blown up right now with the fact that people are saying that, well, the FBI was involved. No shit, that's a revelation, we knew that. But the question that I got all weekend, it was actually twofold. Do I think that the shooting was staged? And if so, by who? And I'll reiterate a couple of things. Number one, I don't have a firm stance on any of it. I'm looking at it from all different angles. I'm considering all the possibilities. I'm considering all the players. I'm not ruling out one player or another just because I have a bias. I'm considering the things that I think are beyond consideration. That is, was Trump involved? You have to consider that he was. And I've outlined pretty much all the reasons I think that, along with I've outlined the reasons why I think he wasn't involved. The bottom line is there's too many red flags here, too many unanswered questions that should have been answered from day one. But the biggest tell for me in all of this is that, according to a couple of sources now, I'm not going to say it's confirmed, but according to a couple of sources, there was a senior FBI official behind Trump that started filming the moment the shots rang out. And the other tell for me is that CNN was at one of his rallies. CNN has not been at one of Trump's rallies in months, if not a year. And the fact that they cut in on a broadcast to show the Trump rally tells me they were not only tipped off, they were told when the shots were going to be fired. That's a massive tell. And more importantly, that is not only an indication that they were complicit in the attempted assassination of a political candidate, but they knew when it was going to happen, where it was going to happen. That is unbelievable. That is treason of the highest order. And we saw it real time. And today it was confirmed that the very institution that's supposed to be investigating it, you know, the same guys that were investigating January 6th, investigating the Seth's last name? Anyway, the intern that was killed, Seth Rich, I think it was. Anyway, those same guys are the guys that are supposedly investigating this. Yeah, that's going to go a long ways. But it shows beyond a shadow of a doubt that there's no left or right. There's no Republican. There's no Democrat. There's no conservative. There's no liberal. There's the haves and the have-nots. Thanks, James. Yeah, it is Seth Rich. And, you know, we often talk about, well, the left's in trouble and they're panicking. No, they're not. I don't believe that for a second. And I will tell you, I'm probably the only one in the group of the entire roundtable cast that, you know, cast and crew or whatever you want to call them, or team, that believes that. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm the only one. I may be wrong. But I don't see this, any of this situation, from the perspective that those that have perpetrated this feel like they're in danger or they're panicking. I also don't see the Biden removal as anything other than a strategically planned event. And, you know, I said this when the assassinated, on the day of the assassination attempt, when we did the emergency roundtable. You can take this narrative in 10 different directions, and it's a win for the elite. And you can take the Biden narrative in 10 different directions, and it's a win for the elite. The thing that I want everybody to key in on is, first of all, every stinky pile of dog shit that has criminality attached to it has the Clinton name attached to it somewhere. And if you honestly think that the Clintons are going to bow out after 4 years of being marginalized and then 4 more years of being pretty much left out of the limelight, you are sorely mistaken. Hillary Clinton is a maniacal, petty tyrant. She has a long memory. She will hold a grudge. And if you don't think for the last 8 years, this woman has been planning some kind of nefarious way to enter the race and go against Trump again so she can win and maintain power, you are sorely mistaken. All you have to do is look at the persona of Bill Gates, and you will understand Hillary Clinton. All this guy does is maniacally plan new ways to kill people. That's what he does. New ways to gain control, new ways to take power, new ways to make more money. When you have that much money, power is the only thing besides children that's a source of currency. You have everything. You can buy everything. You don't need to go prove yourself by earning more money. You've earned it. Like Jeff Bezos. I mean, the guy lost half of his fortune to his ex-wife. He didn't even break a sweat. You honestly think that these people need money in order to feel complete? They need power. They need control. That's the machine we're fighting. We're not fighting a bunch of politicians in Washington, D.C. They're all fucking clowns. These people only produce one thing, and that's bullshit. They don't build anything. They don't produce anything other than bullshit. They haven't contributed anything to society. The only thing that these people have done their whole career is steal from you and I. That's it. I mean, aside from rape, torture, and abuse children, that's all they've done. And over the weekend, there was a conversation in the in one of the chats I'm in, and I called out some of the things that I saw in D.C. Just, you know, in my brief time in D.C., I saw things that made my head spin. You know, that when, I can't remember the kid's name, he was a new freshman, kid in a wheelchair, that was talking about the orgies that he was invited to and in the congressional circles. And there was a controversy over it, and then he retracted it. And then he came out later and admitted, yeah, it was true. I saw that kind of debauchery way back in 2006, 2007. And it was in passing. I wasn't even actively paying attention to it. But I saw and overheard several conversations about that very thing. It's like this commonly known secret in DC. And people think that I'm making this, some of this stuff up. Some of the stuff I've seen with my own eyes. I've seen the level of corruption, the level of conversations. I've been in rooms where top secret information was literally discussed like it wasn't a big deal. And, you know, I've excused myself from several conversations. And you go talk to people, they're like, yeah, it's not a big deal. The whole place is a cesspool of corruption. Everything that these people do, everything that these people touch, everything that they think about touching, they destroy. So don't think for one minute that this Biden, you know, abdication of the race is not going to lead to Hillary Clinton, Big Mike, or Gavin Newsom coming in. And I could be surprised. They could stick with Kamala Harris. But why would you stick with somebody that got 2% of the vote from her own party and try and run against Trump, who's built a machine of his own? And I already discussed the RNC. I was disgusted with the RNC. But it shows you the whole system is so corrupt, it can't be reformed. There's no reformation in any of this. The whole system has to collapse. That's what we're watching real time. We're watching the collapse of our society. And it has to happen. As much as everybody wants to say it's all going to work itself out, the system's going to correct itself, it's too rotten. It's been too rotten for too long. So how do I think this is going to develop with Biden? I think Biden's dead. And if I was watching Mike Flynn's post today, and it was interesting because several people sent me Flynn's posts about the, what is it called? I can't think of the name. I'm a pilot. I can't think of the name of it. Anyway, it's restricted airspace is what it is. But they put a restricted airspace over Wilmington, Delaware, where Biden lives. And then there were several cabinet meetings today, as well as several, let's just say, well-placed rumors that they're going to announce something significant with Biden within the next 72 to 96 hours. We'll see if that happens. And what's interesting is they don't let any good contingency go to waste. especially when you're talking about heads of state. Because the TFR, thank you, terminal flight restrictions. God, it was not coming to me. Can you tell I've been on the phone all day? But what's interesting about TFRs is TFRs are for a very limited time, very limited amount of time in a very small airspace. If you watch Monkey Works, he talks about TFRs over over Mar-a-Lago or lack thereof. Wherever there's a former president, there should be a TFR over their head, wherever they are. And in Trump's case, I don't think there's been a TFR over Mar-a-Lago for 4 years. So it's interesting that there's a TFR over Wilmington, Delaware. It means the president's there, number one. But what's he doing in Delaware? I thought he was in D.C. So there's a lot of unanswered questions. And to be perfectly honest, I think Joe's been on ICE for years. I don't think he's been with us since 2019, to be perfectly honest. But it is what it is. And the other interesting aspect of all of this is that we're seeing a massive push for Harris. And the way I see it playing out is, it's actually quite brilliant when you think about it. You take Biden out, take him off the ticket, it becomes an open convention. Because he's on ballots in several states now, and I don't think he can be taken off. And I could be wrong about that one, but I don't think he can. So that leaves the DNC to hold an open convention. You put Harris in office for the last 4 or 5 months. You have an open convention. You bring in whichever douchebag you want to bring in to install. And it all looks legitimate. Because again, they're here. They need legitimacy. They need acceptance. And they need the buy-in from the public in order to sell the steel. And they need a candidate that's going to be likable enough to the public to where they won't get eaten alive by the social media and media. And you know the media is going to give whoever they bring in air cover, which brings me to Clinton. When Martin Armstrong first said it, I didn't believe it. And then I started thinking about it, and I was thinking, knowing her, again, the Clintons are both lawyers. They're all about destroying evidence, murdering people, trafficking children, laundering money, you name it. So this would be in their wheelhouse. And I said in a Twitter post the other day, we're in Act 5 now. So Act 1 through 3 was identify Joe as a problem. The fake or faux argument that Joe needs to stay. No, Joe needs to go. Then Act 3, Joe needs to go. And then Act 4, you replace him with somebody equally awful. And that would be Camilla. So Harris comes in, takes over. Act 5, open convention. It looks like that's lining up. The piece that I didn't think they would do was Joe just gracefully dies. And there's a state funeral. I thought it was going to be Carter, because Carter's on his deathbed too. In fact, I think Carter's dead too. So when you start looking at all the variables here, they have a smorgasbord of huge, huge events that they can use to distract the public. And it's very interesting that it was the Trump assassination, you know, a week ago, and now it's the Biden abdication. And what's next? Biden dies. So you can see how they're up in the ante for these dramatic events. And look at how everything else fell off the news map. Like, here in Arizona, the Wendy Rogers stolen valor thing with Steve Slayton absolutely fell off the radar. No one's talking about it anymore, only in small circles. And to me, that should be front and center, along with what's going on with the things that are coming out around the assassination. But look at how much of that's off the plate now. That's how they play the game. They hit you with one thing after another, so your focus constantly changes. And as your focus is changing, you're losing sight of the details of the other stuff, and pretty soon you forget about it and you're off to the races. That's the game. It's been the game. But here's the problem with the game they're playing now. They have to up the ante every single time they go down and march to something else. They have to up the ante. There's only so many things you can up the ante with. And ultimately, I've said this 100 times, but it bears repeating. Ultimately, they need to drive some kind of an event to drive civil disorder. They have to drive civil disorder. And they will do it in any way they can. I don't, you know, somebody asked me about the nuclear option this weekend. Somebody asked me about the EMP event. Everything's on the table. But I don't think there's a high probability of either one of those. Because ultimately what they really need is they need some kind of a catalyst event to give them back the narrative. You know, let's face it, they're not going to get it. There's no way they're going to get it. I mean, the American people, especially the people that are on the Trump camp, they are not going to sign up for anything the press feeds them. They're not going to sign up for anything the left feeds them. They've already dug their heels in the sand. So, and look at the bird flu thing, not getting any traction. There was 6 new cases this week. They're not getting the traction that they wanted before because nobody trusts them. Nobody believes Big Pharma. Nobody believes anything that's come out of the World Health Organization. Nobody believes anything that's coming out of the mainstream media. Nobody believes anything that's coming off of legacy social media. You can, and if you're paying attention on Twitter, you can see the bots. You can see when they show up. You can see when the AI shows up. It's the grammar's a bit off. The language is a bit off. You can just see it. In fact, when I did a show with Tommy Kerrigan on Tommy's podcast last Friday, and we were talking about Stripe and Stripe, what Stripe's doing. I think I explained this in my last set rep, is they're using terms of service to nuke conservatives off of their platform so you can't process payments. And remember when I said that they were going to try and deplatform people, they were going to take platforms offline. This is how they're doing it. They're doing it through terms of service. Have you noticed that all of the online providers, even the game providers, have changed their terms of service over the last 6 months? All of this legislation they passed in the last year and a half, especially with the Defense Authorization Act, it allows them to take over social media platforms and dictate what's going to, you know, who stays and who goes. And then on after the last Defense Authorization Act, there's, so when you do the NDAA every year, because that's a yearly thing, you do a delegation of authority. President delegates certain authorities to certain entities within the DOD and within the chain of command to do specific functions. And it's a normal thing. This year, they gave them the ability to do more with the cyber realm versus what they normally have. And everybody freaked out about it, but are you really surprised? You have Eric Schmidt, one of the co-founders of Google, who built the social scoring system in China, working aggressively to change the laws in this country so that social media providers can decide who stays on their platform and who doesn't, and completely go around Section 230. That whole conversation's been going on for 4 years. Do you honestly think they weren't trying to get to this place? Absolutely they are. So you're going to see more deplatforming. And where does everybody go for a source of news? They go to Substack. Substack's the last place on this planet where you're seeing actual journalism happening and people actually citing sources and, you know, building bodies of work that can be linked to actual sources and facts. That you think the elite want any part of that? No, you to the Chinese. And then the other piece that you're seeing too is that you're seeing more and more information coming out about Trump's VP pick, and more information, a lot of conjecture and a lot of disinformation about Trump's cabinet picks. As far as I know, I don't think Trump's made any cabinet picks. And this is more of the same like the VP pick, right? They flood the information with garbage. And then all of a sudden, they release the pick. I don't anticipate seeing any of his cabinet picks until at least October. I don't think he's that stupid, but stranger things have happened. You have to think through this as a strategic game, because they're playing a strategic game, and they need everybody in the U.S. to either stay home and do nothing and sign up for their program, or take to the streets and start some kind of kinetic civil war. That's what they really want. And they need a wider war to wipe out the debt, because again, all roads lead to money. So you have all these lines of operation that they're doing right now, all at the same time. So this Biden-Harris thing is just noise to me. It's just more theater to drag you into their drama to keep you emotionally charged. And I want you to think about, how pissed off do you get when you watch Kamala Harris say anything or Joe Biden say anything? It's all patented. I mean, it's gaslighting at its finest. The stuff that comes out of their mouths is like abject lies. Like, my God, could it be any more obvious? And look, no matter what they say, there's always going to be 20% that go along with whatever, because they're all never Trumpers. And at the end of the day, it's all words. It's all word soup. It's all emotionally driven. It's all to get you charged up. And some of the best advice that I think I saw for the entire population was on the day of the assassination attempt. Pretty much everybody, including myself, said the same thing. Nobody go off the reservation. Everybody stay calm. Everybody stay cool. Everybody stay collected. Let's see how this develops, and let's gather some facts and see what really happened here. And within 3 days, it was pretty much established that this guy had help and that there was supposedly multiple shooters. I mean, information comes out daily, right? On the reverse side, they're releasing information to try and normalize the view. So you have two different information campaigns going on all at the same time. But here's what wins out. Data wins out. The truth wins out. So this drop of the cell phones leading to the FBI is drop one. Drop two should happen the next day or 72 hours. And I imagine if that drop happens and the elite see it, they'll drop the Biden death and start that whole process. There's always going to be a distraction. So here's the thing to keep in mind, and here's the thing to keep in the back of your head. You can't do anything about the national level, and you don't care, because it's all smoke and mirrors anyway. And 20 years from now, when all this is said and done, and we look back at this time, and we have a mountain of information, both in emails, in secure messages, in letters, in diaries, I guarantee you, you're going to see that everything in DC is absolute fiction and has been for 80 years. And that we have been duped for so long that they've rewritten so much history that the things that we'll see about what was really going on will shock people to their core. And how much of our system was not really free? How much of our civil liberties that we hold so dearly were not real? They were just an illusion. I mean, if you think about it, when you sign a 30-year mortgage, you basically assign yourself to a prison for 30 years because you're not leaving that house. You're not paying it off anytime soon. And this is the average person that takes a loan, makes their payments, goes to work every day. They've already created a system of slavery. Everybody signed up for it. And what's it about? It's about chasing the next thing, the next big thing, the bigger, better deal. It's always been about the bigger, better deal. Yeah, but you could have more. Look at all the shit you have, but you could have more shit. And your shit's better than their shit. And their shit makes your shit look bad. So you need more shit to go over their shit. The other thing you're going to realize probably in the next 5 years is how much influence the oligarch class has had on our society for a very long time. People should not be allowed to amass so much wealth that they're above the law. And that's what's happened here. Across Europe, across the West, even in Russia, even in China. People have been allowed to amass tremendous sums of wealth to where they can manipulate every market, they can manipulate every industry, every institution, every person without breaking a sweat. That should never be allowed to happen again. And I get all the free market capitalists that call me all the time and say, you're a socialist. No, I'm not. I just think the currency is a construct. And I think that there's better ways to operate outside of greed. We just don't look at them. We don't even think about those types of things. We think about money is the root of all things. It's just like religion is immutable. And we forget that human beings have their own agendas. Clerics have their own agendas. Catholic priests have their own agendas. And they have for hundreds of years. We just choose to overlook it. We choose to not look at alternatives to what we're currently doing. And I'm not saying this to build some utopian society. I'm just saying that when we build this system, when we rebuild this system, or we rebuild a new system, we have to be mindful of how we build that system so that we don't allow this to happen again. And obviously, the checks and balances that our forefathers put in the Constitution were not enough to keep us from this. And I'm a firm believer that politicians, lawyers, and the rest, they should not be allowed to be in the new system, especially politicians. That whole class just attracts psychopaths and sociopaths. That's not who needs to lead our country. The person we want to lead the country is somebody who doesn't want the job, somebody who's not interested in the job, somebody who wants out of the job every day. That's the person you want to lead because they don't have a vested interest in it. They're not drunk with power. They just want to do what's required and then get the hell out of there. And I don't know how to find that person, but that's how the system should be set up so that those kinds of leaders come forward. And we're going to, let's face it, I've talked about this before where we have to instill a sense of selfless service. Now, what's funny is I watch all these other shows and I see people paraphrasing stuff that I've said, and it cracks me up because, how long have I been talking about selfless service and unity? 2 years, 2.5 years? And now I'm starting to see, all these pundits that are like 1 degree separated from me saying the same stuff. Like, I wonder where they got that. I mean, some of it's no-brainer, right? We need to unify as a country. That's a no-brainer. But the way they've architected the information landscape, just short of a meteorite hitting this planet or a massive natural disaster, I don't see it happening. People are too polarized right now. They're too wrapped up in their own self-interest, and they're too wrapped up in the system in front of them to be able to change. And that's the thing that we as a country have lost. But I would say that's we as a species have lost, the ability to adapt to change. That in and of itself is probably the biggest thing that's going to determine whether people survive or die when all this kicks off. And I'm convinced that it's going to kick off. So I'm looking at some of the comments, bear with me. Deuce, I don't know what you're trying to ask me. There's an account. It's another account, huh? That wouldn't be the first one. There's been like 4 or 5 LTC Murray accounts. LTC underscore Steve Murray, LTC underscore Steve underscore Murray. There's a ton of them. So, that's funny. Excited to share key insights. Call this number and I'll ask you for Bitcoin. Yeah, thanks for bringing that to my attention, Deuce. I'll look for it. But that's probably on Telegram too. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make with all of this is, we routinely talk about being prepared and being focused locally. Over the next several months, that's going to be more important than meeting your neighbors, exercising your equipment, doing training, getting in shape. Now's the time to get in shape. I know I got to do it. I got to get my fat ass out there in this 100-degree weather and do some exercise, get some cardio. You're going to need it. And I don't know what's ahead of us. I'm not going to read the tea leaves and try and figure that out. I mean, I was convinced that March, April, and into May was going to be a violent time and a turbulent time. Totally missed the window on that, which kind of, you know, perfectly honest, I'm glad. But that said, a big part of why we talk about exercising your gear is that this is going to, everything for you, everything for me is going to happen locally around us. It's not going to, we're not going to care about the national level. We're going to be too focused on the near fight. And we're going to be too focused on what new turd they've dropped in our lap. That's why I'm not worried about the national level. I don't care who the vice president is. I don't care who's running the Ministry of Truth. I don't care who is the, you know, new nominee for the Democratic Party. I don't care, because we're not going to make it to November. And if we do, they're going to do something to disrupt the election so they can delay it or call it off or declare martial law. They have to. No one will buy this election result. No one. Not the left, not the right, not conservatives, not liberals. Nobody's going to buy it on either side. And they know it. And they're trying to figure out a catalyst event that will unite everybody like 9/11. Guess what? You played that card already. You played the COVID card already. Nobody's going to sign up for that. And you've played the card of, we're just trying to make sure you're safe. We're doing this for your safety. You know that bullshit? They can't even play that card now, because everybody hears it and they're like, that's bullshit. So they can't play the cards they normally play. So now they're moving into territory where they up the ante. As they up the ante, you're going to see more and more events that are, for lack of a better word, flashbulb moments, but it's not going to work out in the way that they want to work it out. They want us to accept whatever's happening to say, yeah, rah-rah team, let's go take one for the team. No one's going to say that, especially for Ukraine or Israel. And here's what's funny, is that I talk about all these different narratives and the way that they use these narratives and how they, you know, if Donald Trump takes office and takes the oath of office in 2025, I will be astonished, but I will be glad, because that means that three things have happened. Number one, we didn't drop into some kind of a civil conflict or a revolution. Number one is civil war revolution. Number two, it means that we peacefully transition power. Number three, it means that with Trump in office, they didn't try and take him out. And it means that there was some semblance of an election that people accepted. Now, whether or not that happens or not, I don't think so. I still don't think so. But you know what? This is one of those things I would love to be wrong about, but I don't think I am. Because again, we're dealing with people that are sociopaths and psychopaths. They are not going to give up power, and they are not going to go gracefully into the night. They're not going to raise their hands and say, all right, we lost, let's just go home. I mean, look at the Japanese in World War II. We had to nuke their asses to stop the war. And it saved the lives of millions of Americans. Because first of all, the Japanese island is not a small island. And secondly, their cities were huge. And urban fighting is terrible. I know that for a fact. And most importantly, that would have prolonged the war, probably taken us 2 years to secure the homeland. And then we would have had to rebuild it. So there's no scenario there that would be unpleasant if Trump got into office. And there would be no scenario there that makes a lot of sense. But it does make a lot of sense if things happen peacefully. But these people are not going to allow that. They are going to fight tooth and nail until they're either dead or in prison. And it's probably going to be the former. I mean, that's why I brought up Hillary Clinton at the very start of the sit rep. This woman is maniacal. She's petty. she's held a grudge against Trump because she feels like he stole it from her. And maybe he did. Maybe the story about another country, a foreign nation intervening to make sure the vote count was fair, really happened. We'll never know. They're never going to let that out. But the point is that in all these situations, they always have multiple options at their disposal to do something different, and they will. But I think what's very telling is, I think the American people have finally figured out, if you're paying attention to the RNC, that the RNC is completely owned by Israel, completely. The whole Democratic Party is owned by Charna or oligarchs. So there's no situation there where these people are going to go gracefully. Because remember, they're owned by somebody. And I'm just waiting for some of these people to come, because, you know, just to be completely unhinged when things start to melt down and they have no control. That's going to be the entertainment. But that's why I'm saying focus on the local stuff, because the local stuff is what you can see and touch. That's where you're going to get real information, because it'll be right in front of you. And, you know, that's the other question I get too, is why aren't we organizing the national level? Look at the Proud Boys. The FBI had what, 30 or 40 operatives, and the Proud Boys alone? You don't think they're going to have operatives in every other national organization to try and disrupt? That's why we talked about the Patriot Front, because I don't know anybody that says and can say definitively whether these guys are real or whether they're feds. Because you can make a case either way. And, you know, Chris from Combat Studies Group, he made a good case. Hey, this is tradecraft. If you wanted a national level movement and you wanted to make sure that the feds couldn't interdict it and couldn't roll everybody up, then you don't use your real names. You don't show your face. You show up, you meet in a certain place, you get in the back of the U-Haul and you go. And you can make the case the other way too. The point is, national level movements are going to be disrupted because they have the manpower to do it, and they're going to do it. And besides, once all this stuff kicks off and there's fuel shortages, there's logistical issues, there's road blockages, it's going to be local anyway. That's why, you know, 2 years ago I said this is going to go local, it's going to go tribal, and it's going to be very, very brutal for that reason. And that's the part that we're focused on, because we know that's the reality of the ground situation. I mean, most of us have been in a combat zone. We've all seen it. Some of us saw it in Afghanistan. Some of us saw it in Iraq. The point is, we all saw it. And we knew what, you know, this is the thing that most people don't realize, is that a lot of the soldiers that went to Iraq, they were paying attention to the Iraqi people. You know, you go over there, you have your preconceived notions, you have your stereotypes and your biases, all that shit washes off of you when you see the environment and when you interact with them. And over time, you start to see their culture differently because you see all the nuances that have been stereotyped. And I can tell you, it's the same in Russia, it's the same in China, and it's the same in Europe. You have stereotypes in your head about how things are. And then you go over there and you really see how things really are, and it's completely different than everything you've thought. And then you start to see what the real ground situation is, and you're able to understand the culture, at least a little bit, enough to be able to function. But you also realize that the things you've made up in your head about that culture are not real. And when you start to figure out how the culture really interacts with each other and what really happens, especially when you see periods where there's no fuel, there's no water, there's no power. We saw all of that in Iraq because we took the power offline, took the water systems offline. We did it as part of shock and awe. And so to watch the Iraqis deal with those situations and cope with daily life without those amenities and necessities was something that I think left an indelible impression on every soldier, whether they liked it or not. You still saw the hardship every day. And we as Americans are not ready for that in any way, shape, or form. And that's the adversity that I've been talking about for over 3 years. because that level of adversity is why, you know, I've had Troop drill down on the water stuff. I've had Matt Everett and Joe Dolio and Chris drill down on the tactical situations, because most Americans have never experienced any of that. And they're going to be completely shocked when the level of violence is skyrocketing around them and they don't know what to do. It's a completely different environment. And if we can get you ready for just one piece of that environment that helps you survive, well, the better off you're going to be. That's why I'm saying don't focus on the national level noise. It's just noise. Focus on the local stuff. Because they're doing enough things at the national level that are affecting us at the local level. DEI, the situation of curriculum in schools, the sexualization of our children, the marginalization and the attacks on the Christianity, the open and transparent lust for children. All these things are right in front of you at your local area. I don't care where you live. It's in every community now. They've made sure it's in every community. Just like this conversation about reproductive rights. Do you think it's a coincidence that every liberal on this fucking planet is losing their mind right now over Roe v. Wade? What was it, 2 years ago? It's all a design. It's all a design to keep you distracted away from doing stuff, to get ready for what's coming, to keep you divided along party lines, along religious lines, along cultural lines, along racial lines, and along cultural beliefs. And they're highly effective. You know, last week I posted this video, this gal who was talking about how it's morally right to shoot Trump. These are people that are believers. That's how effective the information campaign has been against certain Americans. And that brings me to my final topic tonight. I've been watching For All Mankind on Apple TV, and I've been just jotting down notes about the narratives that are in the show, the talking points that are in the show. And, you know, I lose my shit every so often because I get tired of the gay agenda in everything. It's in every movie. It's in every TV show. They're trying to rewrite history, and they're trying to insert minorities, and they're trying to insert different ethnic races into certain parts of history that would not have existed. And the challenge for me and most Americans should be not to get emotionally charged by it, because it's programming. That's why they call it programming. They're programming you to accept their narratives. And just in this show, literally, there's four seasons of it. I'm in season four, and it's so easy to see. It's sickening. Like, the first two seasons are literally all about the gay agenda. It's all about how homosexuals couldn't come out in the open. They weren't protected. They didn't have the rights. They didn't have the representation. They didn't have the public support, and they just want to live a happy life. And then the other second and third narratives in there is the Equal Rights Amendment. You know, women are equal to men. And then there's the whole agenda around, you know, the man is holding blacks down, and, you know, Jim Crow and some of the others. It's all laced into the show. First two seasons. It's ridiculous. And, you know, the premise of the show is actually a good storyline. The premise is that the space program didn't stop in 1974. It continued to present day, and the Soviet Union existed to present day and still was the CCP, and it was a space race to Mars. And then the commercialization of space. Great storyline. Could have been a great story. But it's so wrapped up with all these liberal gay tropes that you can't get past one scene without there being some kind of liberal talking point. And, you know, you could choose to get frustrated by it, or you can just see it for what it is. It's programming. And the one that's really gets under my skin is that this one did get under my skin. is that they play a NASA engineer. She's in the whole series. And she starts out as just an engineer that's sitting just off the ops floor. She finds a flaw in the programming of either Gemini or Apollo. She fixes it. Then she gets on the floor. Then she becomes flight director. Then she becomes one of the major leads at NASA. Then she becomes the director of NASA. But all during that time, she's colluding with the Russians. And she's giving secrets to the Russians. And finally, she defects to Russia because the FBI is closing in on her, because somebody she's mentored figured out that she was giving secrets to the Russians. And she goes to Russia, defects, goes through some, you know, normal Soviet indoctrination of, you know, we're gonna accuse you of a bunch of things, we're gonna jail you. Then there's a coup in the Soviet Union. Anyway, long story short, that whole storyline is about accepting and forgiving treason. You don't think that that's in there for a reason? These people know the end is coming. These people know that they're going to be held to account. These people know that the American people, hell, the world, wants to see them, most of them, executed for treason. And most of the population is not going to sit back when this is all said and done and they've lost loved ones and accept somebody committing treason and say, it's all right, you just go live your life. No. The American people want justice, and they want justice in a very public and very overt way. None of this backroom deals. You don't go to a prison. Your sentence is carried out in front of the American people, especially for guys like Paul Ryan, Mike Pence. You can keep going down the list. Barack Obama, John Brennan, Clapper, Hayden, the list goes on. They're trying to set the stage through narrative for you to accept people who have committed treason. Well, they were coerced into it. Your answer should be, I don't care. You committed treason. You betrayed your oath and the American people. You don't get a second pass. You don't get to sit back and say that I was just doing my job and I was coerced into it. You don't get to sit back and say, I just wanted my retirement. If you commit treason, you're going to be held to account. End of story, full stop. That's what the American people want. They don't want anything else. They don't want quarter for the enemy. They don't want forgiveness for the enemy. They want justice. That's where the American people are, especially people who have served. If you have served and you've betrayed the country, you are the worst kind of traitor, because you know what it's like to be in the trenches, and you did it anyway, for your own self-interest. You don't get any second chances. You're done. And that's exactly how the American people feel. But they're trying to lace these narratives into every single show. I've seen it in 3 shows now. And you're going to see more of it. You're going to see a full court press to accept Camilla. You're going to see a full court press for an open convention. You're going to see a full court press for some kind of an event, or some kind of liberal trope. And it's all going to happen boom, 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 boom. They can't slow down the tempo. And for whatever reason, they have adjusted their timeline, accelerated the timeline. I don't know why, but they have. And we're seeing the timeline accelerate more and more. I don't prescribe to the theory that it's all these disparate groups that are arguing amongst themselves, and it's this bureaucratic class that's leading and executing all these plans behind the scenes. I'm sure there's a bureaucratic class that's supporting all of these operations, but somebody has the deep financial resources and is investing the deep financial resources to make some of these things happen and to make these moves happen. That's not government money. That's institutional money. There's a big difference, because with institutional money comes expectation. With expectation comes execution. And I don't see them, especially guys like Schmidt and Sergey Brin and that crew of malcontents from Google. These guys are believers. These guys are card-carrying Marxists. These guys believe that communism is better than the system we have now. They believe that a small group of people should rule over the rest of the planet. That's what these people believe. And you can't reform a believer. You can't sway them to your opinion. You can only eliminate them. We learned that the hard way in the desert. Wahhabis are the most violent people on this planet. No regard for human life. They're just zealots about their version of the Quran and the Torahs, and you can't talk them off. You can't have a conversation with them. In fact, you just stop trying. That's where this is headed. Because as the front people are taken out, as the dominoes start to fall, at some point you're going to get to the believers. And the believers are going to be the one that are the fanatics that have nothing to lose, and they will do whatever it takes to further their agenda. That's the class that we're going to run into next. All these clowns in DC, they're just bought and paid actors. They're all just clowns. It's the institutional money behind them that matters. And it's the institutional money that's driving all these operations. It's not some bureaucrat in an SES position. In fact, most people don't even understand what senior executive service is all about. But that's another topic. The point is, it's going to increase. You're going to see more narratives coming out now. They're going to flood the system to try and confuse you about what really happened during the Trump assassination. And, you know, for Trump, the best thing he can do is release some pictures of his ear and the wound. And that would dispel any rumors that he was involved. It would dispel any thoughts that he was involved. Ah, what am I talking about? The left's never going to buy into that anyway. Never mind. There's a lot in front of you folks, a lot of meat to chew on. But the thing that you want to chew on right now is get basic preparedness down. Get basic necessities down and be ready for anything. Because we're dealing with people that have no regard for human life, and they will do whatever they need to do. That's the crowd we're fighting right now. And that's the crowd we're going to be fighting. And then stay out of the emotional space. You got to stay out of the emotions. It's easy to get wrapped up in it. I mean, man, it's easy. You see stuff happen, you're like, yeah, that's not right. So if you stay calm, cool, and collect, you stay grounded, you're not going to get sucked into that emotional arguments. You're not going to get sucked into this emotional conundrum. You're not going to get sucked into these, you know, bouts of anger, desperation. Look, I don't know why I think this, but I think the war we're about to go through is going to suck. And on the other side of it will be a better country, a better population, and a more dedicated and hardened population. And maybe that's the next order of battle that we're supposed to go through anyway. Maybe that's the next level event that we need to go through to raise people's consciousness. Because the piece that we haven't talked about, and Sharita's alluded to it, a few others have alluded to it, is we have to raise our level of consciousness in this country, not just from an empathetic level, but from a personal responsibility level, a personal awareness level, as well as a spiritual level. And if you look around at the sheer debauchery and groupthink, it is very easy to see why I say that. People don't have any personal responsibility, ownership for anything. They don't have any spiritual awareness, anything around them. And that's what's missing from our culture. I'll be back Wednesday with the round table. This week I'm going to have, looks like I'll have, let me see here. What do I got here? We're going to have Clay Martin. We're going to have Joe Dolio again. And we'll have Matt Everett again. I'm trying to get, I got to pin down Bracken. I'm not sure his schedule is, but Bracken will be back on. And I had a conversation on Friday with Dr. Jerome Corsi. So I'm going to try and get Dr. Jerome Corsi onto one of our roundtables, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, stay tuned. New format on Thursday. We'll be streaming live on Podbean. I'll put out more about that in Telegram and on Twitter, as well as on Truth Social about Thursday night's show. We'll be back 4 o'clock on Wednesday and 4 o'clock on Thursday, Pacific Standard Time, 7 o'clock Eastern. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.